Okay. So, again, what we're going to do in the second segment of the lecture is just remind ourselves of some of the basic concepts of networks. And again, I'm pretty much assuming that you've had some networks module. If not, you should have a look at what I say here. Typically, this is what's given in the introduction, more or less, of any networks text. And so just think about the ideas, because, again, they're sort of what underpin most discussions of how networks work. So if you have them in the back of your head, yeah, just it makes it a little easier. Okay. So, typically there's two ways people look at networks. They look at it either from the bottom up, so how do you transmit a bit up to, from transmitting a bit, how do you have computers in Dublin and Beijing that talk to each other? Or they look at it from the other way. I have applications, I have two computers that are talking to each other, and or I want two computers to talk to each other. How do I make that work? And march your way down. So basically the idea is that from an end user perspective, we do what we want to do is run programs in a distributed fashion. Okay. So when you're surfing the web, there's a server. When you type in any URL, you get connected to a server somewhere, who knows where. Okay. And so, again, historically, there was the idea that you had voice data, which had certain characteristics, and sort of computer data, which had certain other characteristics. And what's happened over time is that the characteristics of the computer data have become more and more complex. They've sort of divided out more and more. But, yeah, they can still be sort of essentially categorized. And there's certain performance requirements for that data then that, yeah, the network had better provide if you want the thing to work properly. So that can be in terms of, well, it's okay to lose some of the data, or it's not okay to lose any of the data. I need a certain bandwidth. I need a certain regularity of transmission. There's a lot of different things. Okay. So that's the end user and what they want. And then you've got the networks and the network designers. And so they try and abstract all that away and provide services. And again, these services can roughly correspond to some of the basic data requirements, but as we'll see, they're not exactly the same. And so typically you have things like connection-oriented or connection-less services. And again, although it doesn't happen as much in practice, you can sometimes negotiate certain performance requirements with the network. Okay. And so the way that the network then can provide these all is being clever about its resource allocations. Okay. And so we'll see essentially what it can do. Okay. Now, again, as a principle of network designs, what networks have done is they've sort of separated out various tasks that need to be achieved in order to make networks work. And so you can think, well, the first thing, again, you'd need is point-to-point transmission of bits. Then, well, you might want to make sure that all those bits are actually getting there correctly, sort of on a point-to-point basis. But, again, you can't get from Dublin to China on one link, so then you're going to have to relay those bits over a number of links. And again, keeping in mind that the users typically want sort of some connectivity, sort of end-to-end, you've got to work that in as well. So what the networks have done is they've divided up all those different concerns. They've optimized the, they've come up with solutions for how you deal with each of those concerns. And this is organized, again, in a layered fashion. So one task relies on the next task, relies on the next task, and so on. Okay. All right. Okay, so now I'm having one of these laptop glitches. Let me think. Page down? No. Oh, worked. Okay. Page. Okay. So what we're going to do here again is just sort of a whirlwind tour of all these ideas. And so we'll start with a brief history. Why are histories interesting? Well, because sometimes they justify why certain things are done the way they are, even if they don't necessarily make as much sense anymore. Okay, so way back in history and has very little to do with it, except it's sort of, again, you get some of the basic concepts. Networks have always been around as long as people have tried to communicate with each other. And so early forms of networks would be things like signal fires. You know, you wanted to know when the enemy was coming, sort of before they got there. So you can have some very simple signals that again, they'd be relayed. So the signal travels as far as sight, and so you'd have to go from one sort of a sentinel looking, manning a fire to the next, to the next, to the next. Okay. So you're sort of limited in what sort of information you can send by lighting a fire. So other options were things like semaphores. So you had flags, and depending on the position and exactly what color the flag was, different information was conveyed. Okay. So you could argue it's a higher data rate, but also it couldn't be sort of interpreted from quite as far away, because whoever was at the receiving end had to actually be able to see the flags and see what exactly the message was. Okay, and similarly, if you have messengers on horseback, again, you've got this idea that you can then convey pretty much as complex a message as you want, but you have to relay that message as sort of according to the endurance of the messengers and the horses. Okay, so again, all we see here is that we have some of the basic network characteristics that are true in the type of data networks and voice networks that we're actually interested in. We have the idea that we have point-to-point communication. So message is transmitted point-to-point. That might not get the message as far as it needs to go. So there has to be some relaying of that message. And we have resource sharing in the sense that different people can use these signals to, convey their messages. Okay. So, the sort of oldest network that's of interest to us is the telephone network. And again, this has been around for well over 100 years. The first telephone exchange was patented in 1878. The idea was to carry voice signals, and since the 1980s, those have been carried digitally. Okay. And so, again, we see that there are certain characteristics to the data that's being sent to this digital stream. The classic sampling, you sample at 8 kilohertz, and, 8,000 samples per second. You digitize that sample using 8 bits, therefore you need 64 kilobits per second to transmit your signal. Okay. And so what we see here, again, is that this data has a very specific characteristic. It's how, and again, it's a stream of data. Okay. Now, these days, telephone networks carry data as well as voice, but they were initially designed to cater for the 64 kilobit per second streams. Okay. And so, again, we see that in the design of telephone networks, we couldn't just string a wire from every person to every other person in the world. And indeed, even if you could, you can't send a signal just an infinite distance, or, well, even a long distance along a wire and have it get there at the other end. So, first of all, you had to relay your data, so it had to go from point to point to point. And again, because we can't connect every person to every other person, the resources that we use to do this conveying of the data have to be shared. Okay. And so there's a number of issues that arise from that. Typically, the organization of these of a telephone network is hierarchical. So we have the end user, and they get sort of access to the network, which is at, you know, this low, a relatively low data rate. And then for purposes of efficiency, as the data travels into the telephone network, sort of into the back of the telephone, back all of the telephone network, for efficiency, the data is combined and transmitted at higher and higher data rates, with higher and higher bandwidths. Okay. Because the data had this very regular characteristic, it was constantly transmitting at 64 kilobits per second, it made sense to set up a connection and allocate the resources along that connection. So allocate from, you know, here to China, you're going through multiple points, but along each of those links you have your 64 kilobits per second reserved. Okay, because, you know, you're always going to be using it, so might as well reserve it. Okay. And so that drove, again, historically the way telephone networks were designed. Okay. So much later, we got these computer networks. And so the first network had three nodes and went live in 1969. So that's, you know, a little over 50 years ago now. And it certainly wouldn't be particularly recognizable for us today in terms of what it did. Originally, when you would connect terminals to mainframe computers, and so you just wanted to essentially send keystroke information and commands via keystroke information. Later, you would have the computers talking to each other and allowing sort of relatively simple forms of data exchange between remote locations. And so again, most of this data was in the form of either keystrokes, short messages, or if you're getting really fancy, you might transfer a whole file. Okay. And so the defining element of the internet as we know it is the TCP/IP protocol suite, and in particular the idea of IP and IP as an addressing solution, so a way of locating various elements of the network. And this wasn't proposed till 1973, and it didn't get approved for 10 years following that. Okay. So pretty much the 80s is when you saw a glimmering of what the current internet would look like. Okay. Now, again, in terms of characteristics, well, depending on distances, your data had to be relayed. Again, you can't connect point to point, so you have to share resources, and there were requirements of robustness. This started out as a military project, so if sort of cities were bombed or whatever, they still wanted to have a network that stayed working. Okay. Now, the characteristics of the data that was being transmitted tended to be significantly different from those of the voice signals on telephone networks. Again, if you think about a keystroke, you're just sending a very small amount of information. If you think about the ASCII encoding, you encode that in 7 bits. Okay. And so you're sending this data along, and it's being sent along sort of in dribs and drabs, potentially. Again, if you think about typing, you type a bit, you stop, you type a bit, you stop. And so the nature of the data, and again, the need to be efficient about how resources were allocated, led to resources being allocated in a different fashion. So if I wanted to connect from point A to point B, I no longer set up a channel and said these resources are mine and nobody else's, but rather on an as-needed basis, these resources were allocated. Okay. And so this led to the idea of packaging your data up into packets, and the packets would have to sort of negotiate through the network on an individual basis. They weren't following some connection, some, you know, pre-allocated connection, but again, rather were making their way essentially as individual pieces of data. Okay. And again, this raises issues about, well, how does you have to have addressing so that the packets actually know where they're going, etc. Okay. So, again, we'll talk about how resources are allocated for packets in just a minute. But again, for now, just it's different than, you know, again, for your voice connectivity. Now, since this simple start where, you know, again, you were sending keystrokes, you were sending short messages, you were sending text-based information, you were sending files, the network has evolved to carry a huge number of different sorts of data. Okay, so it still carries files, and it can still send short messages, but now you might be sending voice streams. Again, they have to be adapted suitably to fit in with how the network can carry them. You might be looking at streaming video. Again, things that are playing out as they're being sent, etc. Okay. Now, all of this is built on top of that same network that was originally designed to send these very few simple sorts of data. Okay. And so, what you sort of, again, need to think about is that the types of data being sent now all have widely varying requirements in terms of the resources they need out of the network and the performance they need out of the network. So how tolerant are they to imperfections that are introduced in the network? Okay. So, for instance, if you're streaming video, well, you have a bit of delay, you just wait until the video starts. But if that delay varies a lot from, you know, sort of packet to packet to packet as they send, then, you know, things aren't going to play out very well. Okay. If you're doing voice or video, you can usually tolerate a bit of loss. If you're sending a file, you know, you lose one bit of it and the whole thing is meaningless. Okay. So, this, again, has been sort of well studied, and the IPUT recommendation G1010 surveys sort of various applications and categorizes them according to these data requirements. And I'm not going to grill you on exactly what the requirements are again, but just again be aware that essentially they've categorized traffic into a number of categories, having to do with whether they can tolerate loss or errors and how well it tolerates delay. Okay. Okay. So, what we see in that sort of potted history is just that network design has sort of evolved from two quite different origins, you know, the telephone world and the data world. And to some extent, there is convergence these days, but at least it's not 100% there yet. And so it's worth, again, remembering that there are sort of these two different views of the world, and they are coming together, but not there yet. Okay. And that can be summarized in the idea of having circuit switch networks, which again, resources, connections are set up and resources are allocated end-to-end, and packet switch networks, where data is sent in discrete lots, which are allocated resources as needed as they travel through the network. Okay. And when we discuss layered architectures, we're referring to this packet switch sort of network. Okay. And so the big goal now is to have all IP networks, so have packet transport through networks. Okay, so at a very abstract level, we can say that networks offer data transport services, and those we can classify according to reliability. So if it's reliable, we guarantee that the data gets there. If it's unreliable, we don't. And connectivity. And so if you have end applications, well, you can either make a connection between them over which they can send a number of discrete pieces of data, or you can treat each piece of data that's transmitted essentially on its own. Okay. And so typically if you have a connection-oriented setup, you're going to make some guarantees that the data arrives in the same order that it was sent. Okay. And so again, you depending on what your you can have any combination of these services, connection-oriented, connectionless, reliable, or unreliable. And again, if you think back to the sorts of data and the requirements of the data, these services, different services will suit different types of data better or worse. Okay. Now, in terms of, again, design of networks, historically the big thing was you either had circuit switched or packet switched networks. Quality of service represents sort of additional requirements for the data transport. And typically, these haven't been considered core to the design of networks. Again, there are proposals like DiffServe and InServe where you could negotiate quality of service with the networks, but those aren't actually implemented in practice. As a practical matter, usually in the wired context, things are good enough. Okay. You don't encounter massive, for instance, broadband connectivity, you're not going to really be worried about quality of service. And whether that continues to be the case, who knows, as sort of, again, more and more applications are developed. Okay. Now, in terms of wireless networks, well, this is probably already an issue in the sense that, again, the resources are limited, and frequently there's a huge variability in access to those resources. Okay. Again, if you want to offer quality of service guarantees, well, it's relatively easy if you have a circuit switched system. So you just reserve what you negotiate whatever resources you need and reserve them. For packet switch systems, it's more difficult. Okay. So in a wireless context, most of the wireless networks we will look at have at least examined the issue of quality of service and how you would make, if not guarantees, then at least some effort to support quality of service. And as we go through, we'll sort of discuss what efforts have been made by various networks. Okay. So, again, circuit switching is the idea of making sort of an end-to-end connection. The strange look is because of the thing is the arrows are coming up black when they're actually red, but I was just wondering if that was my computer or the overheads, but anyway. So you reserve all the resources along this connection. Those are then dedicated to your connection and not shared with anybody else. And so again, it's like making a circuit, and the performance along that circuit is guaranteed. Okay. And again, the two issues are that you're required to set up that circuit, and of course you're then sort of hogging those resources. So if you're not using them during the connection, then that's not an efficient use of the network resources. If you are using them, it is. Okay. So the network resources, Now, there's an issue of sort of what's the granularity of sharing. Again, if you think about a point-to-point connection, it doesn't mean that when you're using that point-to-point sort of wire, nobody else can. But it does mean that you segment the bandwidth of that wire up according to some protocol, and typically you either look at the frequency range and divide that up into bands and allocate a single band to each connection, or you can divide up time so you can sort of in a turn-taking fashion allow everybody a chance to transmit. Okay, so again, if you've divided up your frequency spectrum, it just means that each user will keep within their frequency. And if you divide up time, then each user sort of gets a periodic time at which they can send their data for, again, a very specific amount of time. Okay. So packet switching says that depending, again, if you're just sending little bits of data here and there, it's not efficient to set up a circuit, reserve all these resources. And again, it's not efficient from the network's perspective since they have idle resources. And it's actually not efficient from the end user's perspective because it takes time to set up these connections. So you just have a teeny little bit of something you want to send and you're still waiting for the connection to be set up before you can send it. Okay. So the idea behind packet switching is that you would package up your data into a packet, and obviously the packets had to be in some way a finite size, and then the packets will share the network resources. Okay. And essentially, they queue up and are transmitted along the link in some sort of order. You typically just first come, first served. Okay. And in this way, the network resources are only used as needed. So, as long as there's something to send, then something will be sent. Okay. And so, since if you set up a circuit, well, essentially, what you're doing is you're telling, once that circuit's set up, an end user is free to transmit. If you don't set up a circuit, then essentially everybody just sends their data, and potentially there can be problems if you have more data being sent into the network than there are resources to handle it. Okay. So if you think about a single link, if the rate at which the packets are arriving exceeds the bandwidth of the link, then you're going to run into problems, and thus, you know, continuously exceeds the bandwidth. Okay. So packet switch networks are subject to delays within the network. If you have a circuit switch, once you set up that circuit, everything just goes through. If you have a packet switch network, well, you're waiting at various points. And so you have variable delay according to how long you wait to be transmitted along a link, because again, if you think of just having a first-come, first-served system, you queue up and you wait your turn. And so you have no real control over how many people got there before you. Okay. Even if there's no congestion, the way in which packets are transmitted, what's called a store and forward system, which means the packet has to be received at a link before it can be transmitted, so you don't receive the first bit and send it on. Why not? Well, because usually the link has to look at the address and see where it needs to go. But so the whole packet is received, it's examined, and then sent on. So even if there is no congestion, packet switching still introduces more delay in transmitting your data. Okay. And again, how much delay? Well, it's going to depend on how many times the data has to be relayed through the network. Okay. Because each time it's relayed, you have this, you have to receive the packet and then retransmit. So each additional hop causes more delay. Okay. So why do this at all? Well, again, because you can then use statistical multiplexing, and that makes efficient use of your links, your point-to-point connections, in the sense that, again, as long as there's something to transmit, it will be transmitted. Okay. And so, again, this is just showing that you're adding additional delays in having to retransmit your packets. So, how long that is dependent on what's the length of the packet and what the bit rate at which you can transmit the packet is. So the time to transmit a packet is going to be L over R. And then that has to happen at each node along the link. So you start by transmitting it at your sender, then it's received at the relay node, has to be retransmitted, received at the next retransmitted. So adding delay at each relay node or router. Okay. And so again, the benefit is if you have a number of users, but they're sort of only sporadically using the network, then you can fit more of those users into you can accommodate more users in the network. So if we look at a user who needs 100 kilobits per second when they're active, but perhaps they're only active 10% of the time, then if you were using circuit switching, well, you essentially have to allocate the resources for when they are active. So they need the 100 kilobits per second. Okay. And in that case, if you got 1 megabit per second link, you can have 10 users. Okay. Now, if you think about packet switching, and just to run a number, if you have 35 users, so a lot more users, the probability of more than 10 of them being active at the same time is extremely low. Okay. So you could have all of those users in the network, and you would not really introduce much delay or problems into the system. Okay. So, again, in terms of quality of service, circuit switching allows you to make guarantees, but will introduce some delays, namely the time it takes to set up the connection. Packet switching, in its sort of most general sense, makes it very difficult to provide any sort of guarantees, and indeed tends to make things, the performance, fairly variable through a network. Okay. So, again, having said that, should we always use packet switching? Well, not necessarily. Again, what happens in wired networks is that you just keep adding resources so that issues of packet delay, loss, congestion don't really enter into the equation. In wireless networks, it again becomes a bit more difficult because you can't keep adding those resources. But you're still trying to provide the types of applications, you know, the audio and video streaming, which are fairly needy, without without having sort of again the recourse of just providing endless resources for everybody. Okay, and so what we'll see again is frequently at the access point, so where the wireless connection is, there's much more of a tendency to try and sort of allocate resources in some way, sort of some regulated fashion, to the end users than there would be with a wired network. Okay. So, if we consider specifically packet switched networks, the architecture of the network is a layered architecture, And this layered architecture it separates out the various concerns, the various tasks that need to be performed to transmit packets through the network. Okay. And so the reasoning behind such an architecture, well, first of all, you would always want to separate out tasks into sort of smaller components so that, you know, you can more easily define these components. Okay. And then you would like to sort of define interfaces between the components so that sort of that they have clear points of communication. And then if you redesign one component, as long as you keep the interface the same, you can slot different designs in and out. Okay. And so finally, why layering? Well, in this case, it just happens to work. That's how the services are arranged. Is essentially you do one, then the next, then the next, then the next. Okay. So, again, the idea is that you have various services that are sort of well-defined and separate from each other, and one service may require as input the output of another service. Okay, so they communicate, services communicate with each other. Okay. And so in our case, these services are distributed. So you have sort of two entities, sender and receiver, two endpoints. And so in order to achieve whatever task work we're doing, the services, again, rely on each other. But in terms of achieving the overall task, the service, so that's sort of an actual communication, the services have virtual communication, that they have information that's sort of exchanged between the components of the service to achieve a goal. Okay. So in this case, we're trying, you know, we have a passenger and they're trying to travel. So they'll purchase a ticket, okay, and then the next thing they do is check their baggage. Well, they will have to provide proof that they've purchased that ticket. They'll have to show the ticket in order to get their baggage checked. Okay, again, they'll have to have dealt with their baggage in order to get onto the gate and board the airplane. They have to have boarded the airplane for the airplane to take off, and maybe it's the air traffic control routes it tells it when it can take off. And it's only at sort of this point that there's any sort of physical movement. Okay, and then so the airplane flies, it lands. And so, again, if it didn't take off, it won't land. If you get to the gates, that's fine, probably. In terms of communications here, in order to reclaim your baggage, you'll have to show your claim check. So here we see this idea of virtual communication between layers. When your baggage gets lost, you can go complain. So again, you have to show your ticket. Okay. So what we have is that there's a process, there's a series of steps that need to be gone through. And again, they're gone through sequentially. And the purpose of this is ultimately so that you can get this sort of end-to-end service of getting from point A to point B. Okay. So just to recap, each layer implements a service. And it can do that in any way it wants, but there's an interface then by which each service deals with the adjacent layer. And here, and that's where we get the layering. There's no direct communication between, say, ticketing and the runway. Okay, it's all... You have to go through each of these steps. Okay. And then, you have virtual communication. That means that there's information that or things that happen here which are significant to the remote service. Okay. So... Back to networks, what are the sort of tasks that we need to perform? And again, you can think of either going from the top down or the bottom up. We'll go from the top down. So ultimately what you want to do is have distributed programs that are communicating with each other to do something. Web browsing, again, you type in a URL, you want your browser to get a certain web page and display it, so it has to talk to the server and get the server to send it that web page. Okay. And so the way the application works is it has to ask the network to hook you up with the sort of remote server. Okay. So, again, call the client and server. You have to establish some sort of connection between this client and server so they know who they're talking to. Okay. Now, when you start bagging things up into packets, the network has to make some decisions about how the packets are transported, sort of end-to-end through the network. And sort of, there's two parts of that. There's, again, making the decision, I'll send on this link versus that link. And there's also the idea that, well, you actually have to physically send it along that link. And so in order to do that, you'll have to have sort of point-to-point connectivity, and once you have that, finally, you actually get down to transmitting physical bits. Okay. So, TCP/IP represents a collection of protocols that more or less slot into these various applications. What we frequently talk about is the OSI reference model, and again, this reference model sought to define the specific tasks that were needed within networks, and it was the first place where this idea of services and interfaces and virtual communication was sort of fully articulated. Okay. And you can see there's not a whole pile of difference between the TCP/IP and the OSI model, except these presentation and session layers. And basically, nobody's really ever found anything useful to do with them. If you need that sort of stuff, it's just lumped into the application layer, so nobody's actually bothered to implement any of this. Okay. Despite that, typically people refer to networks using and discuss networks referring to this model and the various layers in the model. Okay. So just to see how this works as we go through a network. There's two things to note about this example. First is the idea of encapsulation, which is sort of slightly one step beyond the idea of having these interfaces and services. What encapsulation says is that at any layer within this architecture, the lower layer receiving data from an upper layer will view the data they've received purely as data. They won't care about what it means. They'll just see it as a sequence of bits, and they'll just see their job as being sort of to get that do whatever they do to that sequence of bits, but they won't actually look at the bits and say, oh, that means X, Y, or Z. Okay. So that's, and so this is achieved by, again, the data passed down through a layer is viewed as payload, and then each layer adds its own information to that payload. And the intention of that information is that the information will be used in this virtual communication. So again, if we talk about the transport layer here, a header will be added with certain information. That header will be processed here, and sort of at a remote location. Okay. The second thing to note is that as we travel through the network, various layers come into play. Typically, we don't get back up to the application layer until you're at your end, at your destination. But always the physical layer has to do its job. Obviously, otherwise the data doesn't move at all. And typically, either the link or up to the network layer has to be deployed as you sort of relay the information. And so if you go through the link layer, essentially, you're just relaying the information, but you still sort of make sure that the information's okay and can be forwarded on. It's worth forwarding on. If you go up to the network layer, then you're also making some decisions about, again, what link am I going to send the data on next?
Okay.
So, yeah. Again, we can see our packet here traveling through the network. Again, as it's passed down, each layer adds their header information. Okay, and sort of what it's called varies. I'm not going to get into that because we really won't need it. Okay, and so it just keeps going down. And so you've got the information from the various layers. And then at the physical layer, it just transmits through. And when it's, as it's passed up the layers, again, each layer examines the header intended for it. So here, the link layer examines the link layer header, does what processing is necessary, passes it up to the network layer. The network layer... Okay, the animation's not going to work. The network layer would examine its header, do what processing is necessary, pass it back down through the links and onwards, and it would, again, travel all the way up. When it reaches the destination, it travels all the way up to the application layer. Okay. So, it's important... it's important to think about this. If you, again, if you haven't seen it before, do sit down and think about this and see that it makes some sense. It's sort of integral to networks, and a lot of discussions say, oh, well, you know, that's the physical layer, that's the link layer, this is how we're going to do something at the link layer, etc. So it's worth knowing this. Okay, in terms of how these layers play into wireless networks, well, obviously there's a huge issue at the physical layer with just how you transmit the data. So again, what sort of encoding do you use? How do you transmit the signals? And again, what sort of underlying performance issues are there to... having to transmit something over a radio, over the airwaves. Okay. So, the data link layer again is point-to-point transmission, and this is key in and the. Issue that comes to the fore here is what's called medium access control. So again, we have this shared medium. So how do you share out the resources if you have multiple sort of data to send from different people? And sharing, it's critical, obviously, in radio systems and in circuit switch networks, again, sort of happen through channel allocations, and if you look at cellular networks, what you'll see is that it's done in a in a centralized fashion, so that it's quite regulated. And again, you can, if it's regulated, you can provide more guarantees. If you're talking about the more data networks like local area networks, it tends to be done in a distributed fashion, and so again, less quality of service guarantees are possible, or you have to approach them in a different way. So again, the idea is you can either sort of allocate the resources or let people contend for the resources. Okay, so we're not going to do too much at the network layer. The big issue here would be mobile IPs. So how can devices move from one network to another network and maintain some sort of unified addressing? Okay. And at the transport layer, again, we're not going to consider too much. This might be where you would start considering, again, end-to-end quality of service issues. And application layers, again, we're not going to look at how applications would specifically deal with the vagaries of wireless networks. Again, the thing to do is keep in mind that it's the applications that drive all these quality of service requirements. Okay, So just to wrap up, how applicable is the layered architecture to wireless networks? Well, again, this is changing. I should change the slide. Up until recently, cellular networks were very much circuit switched. They're now introducing packet handling, and we'll go to an all packet-based system at some point in the future. And so, again, other types of wireless networks sort of have issues at sort of various other layers. Again, there's a lot of medium access issues, and with ad hoc networking, there's the additional sort of very complex routing structures. Okay, and again, on top of that, performance issues have led to a lot of proposals about cross-layer protocols and not necessarily adhering to this rigid layered architecture. So that's all for today. Again, this should more or less be a review with maybe a few pointers into sort of what it means for wireless systems. If not, do pick up a textbook and have a little look. It's the last time it'll sort of be come up as an explicit issue, but again, it'll probably be somewhat implicit in what we do. And so next time we're going to start sort of the real meat of the course with looking at radio systems and again the transmission of bits over radio systems and what needs to happen there.